Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me. My guest today is Lee Johnson. Morning, Lee. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Yas. Thanks for having me on.
Look, thank you for being with me. Look, just to start us off, Lee, you know, for those that aren't familiar with who you are and the work that you've done in the past, would you mind just giving us a bit of a background as to what that is and how you've got to where you got to today? And I'm sure, you know, that will give us plenty to kind of pick and probe on throughout the conversation.
Yeah, great. So I've been coaching now for over 20 years professionally. I started off coaching as a volunteer, as most people do, grassroots clubs, etc. And then when I'd done my badges at 18, I started my badges then. I got an opportunity to work for Crystal Palace part-time initially. For their foundation, and that led into a full-time role. So I was there for about 5 years. I worked in the club's academy during that period as well. I then had an opportunity to become an FA licensed tutor, which was, you know, something that was quite good. I was quite passionate about developing people and coaches, especially with the role that I was doing. And I then left Palace to set up my own coaching company, which was based in Southeast London and then in Kent. So we would run schools programs and coach education. And I got an opportunity then from there to join Chelsea, working in their academy. And I was there for around 6 years. And after that, I left in 2012 and then moved to Rwanda in Africa and was the technical director for the National Federation and also coached the under 17s, the 23s and the senior team. And then I moved to India to become the assistant national team coach and was the head coach of the under 19s and 23s. Returning to England, I think it was 2017, I then joined Barnet as head of coaching. And so that's my journey in a nutshell.
Fantastic. You know, you kind of crammed, I guess, maybe 15 years plus there in less than 15 seconds. just going to take you right back to the start of it. You said you started your coaching qualifications around age 18. What was it about coaching that kind of caught your eye that really got that ball rolling for you?
Well, I had every aspiration of being a pro. You know, I was playing for Millwall as a schoolboy. Loved the game, was like really, really passionate about playing it. And I was doing well at the time. And then, like so many of us, we have like bad injuries, and I just started to fall out of love with actually playing. And I got released from Millwall when I was about 16. And when I was at school, my PE teacher had his own coaching company, and I'd done a little bit of voluntary work for him. And I kind of really, really enjoyed it. I got, you know, got right into the coaching side of things, not having any aspirations of being a professional coach as such, and maybe seeing it as a career option. It was just more, I like doing it. I like working with the young players. I liked learning new things. And it was just like an addition to me playing. So if I couldn't make it as a professional, then maybe it's something that potentially I would have considered doing, you know, as a career. And then when I was in secondary school, I was playing for Gravesend and Northfleet in their youth team. And my manager at the time had his own company, and he ran lots of school programs and holiday camps and stuff. And I got involved with you know, coaching with him. And I think he was the real kind of like turning point, I suppose, in terms of how I viewed coaching. And it made me feel like, well, that's what I really want to do then. Like, he was quite a, you know, influential in that decision. And, you know, he's a good coach, played the game, you know, had a good career. And, you know, when I see him working with players and how he kind of interacted and you know, bonded with the kids at the time, it was just sort of like, well, you know, that was one of my biggest actually, you know, takeaways from him, how to engage with people. And it's all about having a good personality, and I think, you know, coaching. So that was from an early age, that was something like I felt that I had. I was a good people person, and I wanted to utilize that skill within coaching, and obviously further develop that. So that's initially how I got started. And you know, so when I was 18, I'd done my level two and then progressed on to my B license and so on. And I just got this bug for it in the end. And I moved clubs. I was playing for Dartford Football Club, and my manager at the time was Nicky Johns. And he was the manager of Crystal Palace's foundation program. And through him, I got involved, you know, with coaching. And that was my real, like my first real job, you know, coaching professionally or working full time in football. And I was 19 when I started. So I was quite young, and I was quite naive, you know, still quite immature. You know, it's not until you step into a working environment, you grow up quite quickly. And coming from Kent, where I grew up, it was completely different from going into Southeast London. The environment was completely different. The dynamics completely different. And for me, it was like, okay, well, you know, I need to grow up a bit here and, you know, immerse myself into the environments that I was working in. And that's something that I tried to do.
Brilliant. You know, you're obviously talking about there, immersing yourself in, touch back on obviously the coaching qualifications. It seems like you kind of immerse yourself in those a little bit as well, because, you know, to kind of progress onto UEFA B at age 18, it isn't common, certainly, or probably more so now than it was back then anyway. What was that like? What was going through the qualifications at that point there like for you? And, you know, would you mind maybe talking to your perception of how the qualifications were back then and where they've progressed to now? And what your views are on that?
I think like back then it was pretty much a standard pass or fail. So you did your 2 weeks course, and then you went back after 6 months then and do your assessments. So my level two, I found that quite standard. It was quite basic for me, because, you know, you're teaching basic technique and elements of the game, tactical elements of the game in small-sided situations. So that was something that I was getting used to through doing the work that I was doing at the time. And when I started my B license, that was for me the next level. I felt that the time between taking my level two to my B license was too short. I needed to gain a bit more experience and gain more knowledge and understand the game a bit better. I wouldn't say I struggled, but it was difficult. The course that I did at the time, there was a lot of former players on it. So it was I was quite intimidated by people that was on the course, and the tutors were really good. That, you know, they were very supportive. But I actually failed my first attempt when I took my B license, and I was really nervous leading into that whole assessment. I wasn't sure whether I was ready to go. And I actually remember driving down there. I was like that close to phoning him up and saying, look, something's come up. I can't come today. Like I was like really like nervous about doing it. But I actually think failing that the first time made me a better coach. And because I think nowadays coaches get fast tracked through a lot of qualifications quite quickly. I think back then that pass or foul situation, it might have been, it was right then, maybe. I think obviously things have changed so much more now, but I think coaches need to take time and actually learn and practice and educate themselves, because the jump from even doing a level two to an A license is huge. And it was huge back then. And I suppose like, if I was like looking back at myself, then I would have liked to have been a bit more prepared leading into that first assessment. But failing it was a good thing for me. It kind of taught me a little bit, about myself, but also, that I really wasn't ready at that time to gain that qualification. So then I went back a few months later and then, passed the course. So it was a good experience, even though it was a difficult one to take so early on. But I think the qualifications that are in place now, I think they're really, really good. They're a gold standard for me. Like if you look at other federations across the world, they do look to the English FA as like a leading force in coach education. And I think with the introduction of like the youth award and doing the modules and gaining the AYA, I think that's a really good introduction to coaching in a holistic approach, where back then you never got taught about that. Everything was about what you're doing on the pitch. How can you influence a player's decision on the pitch? It's all technical, tactical driven. That was the main focus, but everything now is changed, as you're aware. And I think that's for the better. I suppose my only kind of concern sometimes is that you get a lot of young coaches getting their qualifications quite early on, at quite a young age, and maybe think they're A license ready when actually they're not, and they need that experience and that time to gain the knowledge to back up the actual qualification that they've got.
Yeah, no, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, just to kind of get a bit better background on my own journey, I've done my level two age 18, similar to you, 19 maybe. But then, I went on to do my B license a couple of years later due to personal reasons. But then within 6 months, I finished my B, or 6 to 8 months, I finished my B, went on to my A. And I guess, there's no one size fits all approach. I think for me, it was always, right, if I know what the next stage looks like and I've got a bit of an exposure to that, I can start preparing and working towards that, if that makes sense. But equally, obviously, there's the argument of, right, go and get the qualification and go and put it to use first before, and really hone the skills and the things that you've picked up on that course. So there is two elements to that. I know some coaches might be listening to this, but I'm keen to kind of get through the qualifications, and others thinking, I want to get some experience. I think there's validity in both thoughts of school of thoughts in that respect. I guess just from the, you talked there about the coaches being younger nowadays, trying to get through some of these qualifications, which I agree with, but I think, that also probably maybe comes in line with the idea that actually coaching has now become a general profession, whereas maybe 10, 15 years ago, it probably wasn't like that, or maybe even before that, it was you had to be of a certain background or have certain life experiences or certain networks to kind of be considered as appropriate for the environment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think back then when I started, there were very few opportunities to coach at an elite level. The academy system has changed massively over the last 10, 15 years. A lot of money's gone into it. Therefore, there's more opportunities to work in a game across all the different departments. So I completely understand why a young person would want to accelerate themselves and get an opportunity as quickly as they can. I think when I was growing up, doing the work that I did when I started, going into the schools, working in local communities, running after school clubs, all of these experiences really, really honed my skill set. And for me, coaching is all about communication, building relationships. And that was something that I felt that really, really helped me out. And I still use that today. I think that's one of my strengths as a coach, and not necessarily as a coach, but just as a person in general. I'd like to think most people that come across me on a daily basis in a professional or a social kind of background would, you know, relate to me quite well. And, you know, I can kind of engage in conversation. And I think that stemmed from my early years of coaching in those types of environments. And that helped me as I've progressed. You know, when I was like 19, 20, there's no way did I think that, you know, I was going to be coaching at international level. That wasn't even on my mind. You know, I just enjoyed the moment. I enjoyed working, you know, in football, and just wanted to see where it progressed. And that was all I was thinking about at the time. But I do feel that experience is key to anything that you do. And, you know, we're all learning. You know, I'm taking the time now to study and to keep myself educated, to learn new skills and, you know, develop in other areas. And we never stop learning. We're always going to, you know, develop. And, you know, I just, like, I suppose, like you say, people want things at different, you know, different times, and, you know, it's not one size fits all. So I completely understand that.
Just kind of talk on there, you talk about that word development. You know, we want to look at how your career then develops. You know, you've gone from working after school clubs and, you know, community settings, doing level two, got your B license, maybe to kind of build up some more experience. What happens from there? Where you go next from there?
So I got an opportunity to work in the academy at Palace. So the academy back then was not what it's like today. You know, it was the resources were good, but they weren't on the level that they are. But the players were good. You know, so you're going from a community setting working with mixed ability, then to go and work in an elite environment. It's two different skill sets. You know, one skill set is understanding how to engage and, you know, work with children, you know, on mass participation. And then the other is to work specifically with an elite group of players to develop them in an elite environment. So it's completely different. The approach is different. And I think initially the transition between the two roles was quite tough for me, because I've gone from all I've known is literally based community-based work. And then stepping into like an elite environment at such a young age, it was like, okay, my whole approach needs to change. My communication needs to change. My, you know, the way I teach players needs to change. And it took a bit of time. You know, there was a few, you know, difficult moments where, you know, I'd put sessions on and they was a car crash. And it was like, well, that wasn't at the level it should have been. And it was purely based on the experiences I've had in my other role. I thought that would be like applicable to working in, you know, in this like new environment, let's say. And that's when you start to learn. And I think, you know, you can make mistakes, and nothing, any coach that's out there, maybe listen to this, don't be afraid to make mistakes. That's how you learn. That's how you're going to get better. You know, we see players playing football all the time, players making mistakes all the time. They just learn from that and get better at it. So I see it was a really good opportunity for me again to then develop onto the next level. And I think when I did my FA tutor's license qualification, again, that was the next step. You're then a tutor teaching people how to become coaches. So you're seeing it from a different perspective. You know what the standard is like. You know what the expectations are, you know, in terms of how a coach should behave and the role model and, you know, the things that they should be, you know, setting out to the players that they're working with. And, you know, again, it's something that was just another string added to my bow. And I was getting I had a perspective of being a community coach, being an academy coach, and then being a coach educator. And I felt that was something that really, really helped me out.
Just from your experiences working as a coach educator, what was the biggest thing that you kind of picked up that you were able to then implement and transfer into your, I guess, your actual coaching itself?
Well, I was young, actually. I think I was 23 when I started coach education. So you can imagine turning up to, you know, a venue with guys and girls that maybe were a lot older than you, you know, had more life experience than yourself. And you're then teaching them how to, you know, coach football. sometimes you can be looked down upon and like, well, you know, what's this young lad like? You know, who is he? You know, what's he done? You know, so all of these things you start to think about. But I think for me, the biggest thing is how you come across and how you communicate with individuals. I wouldn't say I was an expert back then. I'm not saying I'm an expert now, but I do think that you need to be able to communicate with people from all different backgrounds at all different ages as well. And I think that that's something that really, you know, was a turning point into how I coach football, how I communicated with people. And so that was one thing. And then I suppose back then it was when I was teaching like the level one, it was very standardized. You know, you taught this practice, you did it this way, and that's what you look for from the candidates that we're assessing. But I felt that for me, coaching was becoming a profession for me. And, you know, I like to pride myself on a standard that, you know, that I'd set myself. And so I would look for standards across the candidates, how they would present themselves, how they would talk, you know, how they would turn up, would they turn up on time, all of these things, because at the end of the day, that's if you pass someone, you're giving them the license, let's say, to then go and work with players. You want that person to be the right type of role model for the people that they're working with. And I actually remember, it's quite funny actually, this guy's turned up for his assessment in a pair of Bermuda shorts and a tank top and some boots to do his session. And I was like, no, you're not doing that. And I turned him away straight away, because I thought to myself, like, how could I allow that? You know, how can I, you know, forget my age, forget my experience. I'm tutoring that course. That's my responsibility to, you know, get people through it. But if that's how he's actually approaching an assessment, then how would he approach, you know, coaching players, you know, in a grassroots type of environment? And I just think it would be completely wrong for me to have let him do his assessment. So it was things like that, and I just thought, no, you're not doing it. And he wasn't happy, but you know, I just thought that was the best decision to do. And so I was looking at standards and how to communicate. I think they were the two big things for me at the time, you know.
Excellent. Yeah. So from there, you do 23 coach education, working in the academy now, and you know, UEFA B licensed coach, range of experiences, such a, I guess, still a relatively early stage in your coaching journey, you know, 5 or 6 years into it. Where does the journey go from there? Because, you know, you talked there at the top of the conversation that, you know, you had time as a technical director in Rwanda, time as the assistant national team coach with India. How does that happen?
That's where I think when people want something so much, I think sometimes, yeah, you strive to get, you know, to fill out for, you know, fulfill your dreams, let's say. I never, as I said earlier, had any aspirations of doing what I'd done. I was just happy just seeing where the journey took me. And I think it's all about grabbing opportunities and taking them. And so I left Palace to start my own company. And that was something that was really, really good for me. It gave me an opportunity to manage myself, manage my time, again, develop another skill set, because you're managing people now, you're managing relationships with clients, etc. And that was one of the best decisions, you know, that I had made. Alongside that, I then started working at Chelsea. And so I went in part-time. I was coaching in their development centres, coaching under-8s, the under-10s, and various other age groups. And it came through an opportunity that you know, come my way through someone that I'd known, you know, for a long time. And you know, he had just joined the club. His name's Michael Bill. He's now first team coach at Rangers. So he had joined Chelsea, and he said, look, you know, I need some staff to work in some of the development centres that we're you know, putting across London. You know, would you be interested in coming on board? So initially it fitted in with my schedule, with me running my business, and it was a good fit for me. But Chelsea takes things to a completely different level, and everything that they done when I was there, like walking into that environment, the way in which people conduct themselves was first class. You know, the level that people have to aspire to every day is is unbelievable. And it was something that inspired me to really want to work, you know, at this level and potentially beyond. And so as I started working there, another opportunity came to then work with the under eights and then the under tens and, you know, other age groups. And I've been blessed to work and with some fantastic players that are now gone through the whole academy system and now playing in the first team or playing overseas in Europe, have represented their countries. And to see that and to see their journey and how they, from where they started to where they are now, it's just a nice, it's a nice thing to you know, to play a part in. So, but after a while, I felt that, like anyone, we want to progress, we want to keep learning, we want to get better. I just felt that the opportunities at Chelsea for me to do that were, you know, were a bit dry, and I wasn't maybe going to get given the chance that I felt that I either deserved or would have wanted. So I had a chance to go out to America. Neil Barth, the academy manager at the time, said that an opportunity's come up to go to New York for a few months to work with a company called Inside Soccer. So there was like a coach education online platform at the time. So they had a partnership with the club, and I actually went out there for 3 months to work with them. And that's when it will change for me, like completely. Going overseas, working in a completely new environment. I felt actually that I became more confident working overseas than I did working in England. I felt like the reins and maybe the pressure that either you put on yourself or the pressure that's around you, you know, was relieved. And I was able to kind of come out of my shell a bit more. So part of the job in the States was to run coaching conventions across North America. So we ran a couple of coaching conventions, and someone was watching me deliver a session. I was then approached later on in that year to go out to the NSCAA convention in Philadelphia to present. And initially I thought it was a wind-up because I'd been the previous year, and it's a massive event. It's huge. And hopefully once the pandemic's cleared up, if you people get a chance to go to the States, to the convention, you know, it's an unbelievable event and well worth going to. So I felt it was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a wind up initially. And I then accepted the offer to go out there and ended up doing a presentation, a coaching presentation. And Dick Bate was doing a session next to me on the other pitch. And from that actual session opened about three or four doors, and, you know, eventually led for me going out to Rwanda. I met the he wasn't the national team coach at the time, but he, a guy called Steve Constantine, and he was out there presenting as well. So we connected and stayed in contact, and he then became the national team coach in Rwanda and told me about the opportunity of going out to Rwanda as a technical director. And I thought, well, is this, you know, is he being serious? Because I don't think people realize how big these roles are until you're actually in them. And I didn't think I was maybe ready for it. And this is me being completely honest. I was 33 at the time. To be a technical director of a national federation, I was the youngest in the world when I went out there. Yes, I've had experience, but maybe not on that kind of level. And so I was really, really kind of naive in terms of what to expect and maybe how big the actual job was. So I ended up going over there, and you know, that was an unbelievable experience for me from start to finish, and I think probably the best experience that I've had, because you're going from an environment which, you know, where everything's in place, you've got all the resources to do your job, you've got good players that you're working with, got nice facilities, you've got good people around you. So then go to an African country that's had a past, that's come through what they've come through, and are rebuilding, and you're then trying to develop like the football on a national level to give people opportunities, was something that I really, really, you know, wanted to be a part of. And, you know, I could say I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Fantastic. And, you know, you talked there, I think one of the key bits I probably want to pull on is that self-awareness piece and that self-reflection to say, do you know what, am I actually ready for this, or what's my skill set that I can bring to it? And I think just having that mindset of being able to just do that in its first instance is a very positive step. So, you know, I'm a firm believer of, if you recognize the current state of affairs, then you're halfway there to kind of overcoming any challenge that's in front of you. If you're not aware of that, then you're not going to be able to deal with it. I think that having that in your mind, I think it almost, people say, you know, when the opportunity comes up, you've got to be, you know, is it the right one and is it not the right one? But sometimes you won't know until you try it. You know, it's through those situations there where I'm a firm believer, if there's a job available that you're interested in doing, do it and learn on the job. Because if you work hard enough and you're passionate enough about it, you will pick up what you need to pick up, and the rest will kind of bring itself together in that respect. So kind of just on that, then you speak, just, you know, before we kind of move on, that experience there at Rwanda, what was the biggest thing that you took away from that experience for yourself?
The whole experience in general. I think someone's asked me this question before, but when you go overseas and when you're working in a completely new environment, you can't go with a mindset, right, I'm going to change the world, I'm going to do this and this, because it's just not going to happen. You know, so you have to be aware, first of all, of the environment you're working in and the people that you're working with and their expectations. So for me to maybe go into Rwanda and go, right, we're going to do exactly what, you know, we've done at Chelsea, and I'm going to implement that here. You can't do that because they don't have the resources and the infrastructure and, you know, various other things to be able to do that. So you have to work within your means, but you have to prioritize. I think one of the biggest things that I did, you know, in the first like couple of weeks that I was over there was organize and arrange meetings with key stakeholders. So the Ministry of Sport have a major part to play in all of the national federations across all sports. And, you know, speaking to them and seeing what their vision is and understanding where they want to take football was really important. Understanding what the president of the federation, what his vision was and how we can align everything together. Going to meet all of the football clubs and seeing, you know, what things work well there and what things don't, what they like to see improve. So that was a real good, you know, eye-opener for me, because then it gave me an opportunity then to go, right, well, these are the things that I can now start to work on. These are the things that I'm going to prioritize. So one of the biggest things was coach education. They needed to upskill their coaches, and they needed to develop like a youth development program for young players. So they were the two main things that I actually started to work on. So we set up a grassroots schools program, not too dissimilar to what you might do, you know, if you was working, you know, in a foundation, a professional club in England. Well, we did it. We rolled it out nationally. And it was a big, big task because we were limited on staff and resources, but we piloted it, and, you know, it then became something that was part of the football calendar, or part of the calendar within schools. And then we organised a youth league, a national youth league for boys and girls from under 15s to under 17s. It's something that they didn't have in place in the country at the time. And when I joined the federation, the president was like, look, this is something that has to happen. This is what we've agreed with FIFA. This is what we've agreed with the government. This needs to be done. So there was quite a lot of pressure initially to get the league set up, because anyone that's, you know, organized the league before, there's a lot of work that goes into it. And I actually remember the first time that we launched it in the north of the country. So over 5,000 people turned up to watch under 13s game and under 15s game. And that was all from the local community, came to the, you know, this field, and the crowd around this pitch. And it was a huge event. Like FIFA were there, like CAF were there as well. And it was good. And actually, the leagues are still in place today, which is something that I'm quite proud of. And like the coach education was a huge like plus for me to get organized. You know, they went from having something like four courses a year to something like 20 to 30 courses across all different aspects of football. And, you know, that's something that I felt that needed to happen. But you can only work with what you've got and with the resources that you have at your disposal. But I think with one of the biggest things that during my time, you know, happened was the national team's improvement in the FIFA rankings. Like, we went from 134th to 64th in the world. And, you know, it was the highest ranking that the country's ever had. And then it was big, big news, you know, especially on the African continent. And, you know, we'd done a really, really good job. And as Steve had left, like, around, I think it was December or January, to go to India. So I then stayed and basically managed the national team until I left. And but yeah, there's some big achievements, I think, that I had during my time there. But for anyone wanting to go and work overseas, I think if it's something that you've always wanted to do, then definitely do it. But if it's something that you're not sure of, then do it as well, because you, like you said earlier, you learn from doing. And it might not be you. You might go there, you might think, no, she's not for me, I can't do this. But you might go there and it might blow your mind. You know, you might just be experiencing so many different things that you wouldn't have if you was in England or another country, you know, if you were staying at home. It was, so the exposure going into that role was really big for me. And I didn't realise the level of, like, attention, especially across the media, that I was going to get until I arrived. It was quite difficult to deal with and manage at first. But then I suppose as you grow into the job and you learn, you kind of you understand how to play the presser, let's say.
I'm just curious, you know, and I'm just, you know, I guess I'll ask it quite bluntly. What was it like for you as a white man going into that environment and that culture? Did you feel any intimidation from that perspective? Was there any preconceptions of from your perspective of what that might be, and that, what, you know, in the, I guess the realities of that, what was that like?
Yeah, I was nervous from start to finish, from when I left, like, the airport in England to flying out there. The whole journey, I was thinking, is this the right decision? Have I done the right thing? But on, you know, when I landed, from the moment they picked me up to the moment I left, the people there were magnificent with me, absolutely fantastic. There wasn't a thing that I didn't go without. You know, they made sure that everything was in place for me, and especially in terms of me being away from my job. So, like, you know, how, you know, my accommodation, you know, putting me in touch with certain people to help me socialize and navigate my way around, like Kigali, and all of those things were really, really important to me. So I think that really helped me settle. In terms of me being a white man in an African country, it was a little strange, because you go from being a minority, majority, to a minority. And I can understand maybe how people, some, you know, might feel. And it was strange. It was a different, completely different experience. I remember going to a school. I think I arrived on the Tuesday, and on the Friday I was doing like a tour around Kigali, and I went to this school. And as we drove in, I got out of the car, and all these kids came running towards me, all shouting "Mazungu, Mazungu, Mazungu," all pointing at me, and coming up to me, touching my skin and touching the hair on my arms and stuff like that. And it was purely because they hadn't seen that many, like, you know, white men, you know, in their time, and it was a new experience for them. And for me to be in that environment and, you know, have that experience was, like, very humbling, like really, really humbling. And I remember this young kid's come up to me, and he's held me this ball, and it was just made of, like, material and wrapped in string. And I was like, well, like, how can I not kind of play football with you and all your mates now? So we ended up having a game of football, and I stayed to watch him train. And it was a real, real good experience. And I think you have to be really humble in those situations. Appreciate what you've got at home. But when you're in a completely different environment where people don't have as much, you have to be really understanding. And I think that's something that I really learned quite quickly. You've got to be completely aware of your surroundings.
Well, just kind of on that then, Lee, you know, I'm just picturing it. You talked there about, you know, it's humbling experience. Did you find that that experience helped you develop more empathy for, more specifically, I guess, the Black community in coaching, and maybe what they're potentially going through, but just underrepresented groups in general. And how has that then, you know, how have you then taken that? And obviously, you've then had a similar potential experience in some of the things that you've kind of observed going to India, and I'm sure we'll get onto that. Have you then taken those experiences and I guess where you've potentially developed more empathy and an understanding of what it might be or what it might feel like to be a minority, and knowing that and going living through some of those experiences, what have you been able to bring back with you? And I'm sure we'll get onto the, we'll talk about the end of it. I'm really curious to know, what have you brought back with you from that perspective that you feel has helped you maybe potentially shift the culture and attitudes around underrepresentation, more specifically from Black and Asian coaches in the game?
I think initially, the first thing I would say is that I've got so much more empathy towards people, and it really humbled me. Like, the whole experience in Rwanda humbled me massively. I'm a humble person anyway, but just even more so, because in England and in the Western world, you know, we always moan and groan about what we don't have and, you know, how bad things are. But you don't realise how bad things are until you go to a country which is underdeveloped and you see how people live, and you see poverty firsthand. Then you realise how lucky you are, you know. So that was one thing that was, you know, a big learning experience for me, understanding that, and also understanding how to behave around people. So Kigali, the capital, is a very developed a capital city. There's a lot of NGOs and government embassies there. So there's a big expat community, which actually helped me out, because it helped me, you know, in terms of socializing with people and getting out and about and meeting people. But I think at a time of, if you're asking me about underrepresentation, it wasn't something that has ever like really crossed my mind, if I'm being honest. At the time I was, especially when I was there, I think now people are so much more aware of underrepresentation. There needs to be more opportunities for people, regardless of your background, if you're good enough for the role and you deserve to be doing that job, then you should do it. I think me being a minority in a majority country was a very strange experience. But I felt what I needed to do over there was just try to help people.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Because, you know, I'm not going to be there for the next 10, 20 years. I was there for initially for a two-year contract. So I'm not going to change everything in 2 years, but I can help influence decisions. So one of the things I like to think that I did is give local coaches an opportunity to, one, upskill and have more experiences. So the current national team coach now of Rwanda was my assistant at the time. And he was the assistant of Steve Constantine. He's now, you know, progressed and been, you know, promoted as the national team. He's done really, really well. The under 17s assistant national team coach that was working with me, he's now the under 20s head coach. So coaches have progressed, and there's obviously more coaches that have gone on to you know, take on more roles since I've left. And I felt that was one of the things that I had to be responsible for, is giving people a chance and an opportunity to you know, to develop in those ways, because you're not going to change everything in such a short period of time. You know, change takes time, and almost it's like a generation, you know, for things to change. And I just felt that having that experience and, you know, living in, you know, in Rwanda, and just seeing how people lived their lives and how people worked was really, really beneficial for me, you know. And I think it's made me a better person, but also a better coach, because I feel like now I'm a better understander of people.
Definitely. You know, you talked about your time at Rwanda. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of around 2015-ish. You've now gone from Rwanda, I'm assuming, into now, I guess, a build and that ongoing relationship that you've got with Stephen Constantin, and you've now gone to assist him with the India side.
Yeah, so I think during my time in Rwanda, I really wanted to, my coach would be on the grass, because that's what I started doing. That's my bread and butter. That's something that, you know, I wanted to continue. So when you're working in a national federation, there's very limited opportunities to work with national teams, unless it's international duty. So there's obviously a gap between your fixtures and when you would play. So I just felt that I needed to be coaching. I think that the experience of being a technical director really, really helped me, because it was not understanding all of the things away from the pitch, things that I was completely unaware of, how to build relationships, how to manage key stakeholders, how to manage expectations, all of these things, how to put things in place, things I hadn't done before. But I felt that I was a bit too young for the job, if I'm being completely honest. I felt that I needed to gain more experience, especially at international level. And I wanted to be back on the grass. So when Steve went to India, he initially approached me and said, like, would I consider coming over? And obviously knowing that I was already in Rwanda. And I did say, well, you know, what's the role? Because I'm not going to just jump ship for a role that's not going to help me, you know, develop. He goes, look, well, I want you to be my assistant with a national team, and then you're going to be the head coach of the under-19s and also the 23s. So the under-19s were on a full-time academy program. So they had a national academy. So from under-15s upwards, they had a national full-time academy. So that meant straight away it became appealing to me, because I'd be working with players on a daily basis, which is something that I really wanted to do. I was working at an international level with the best players in India, and I was working, you know, playing against you know, countries overseas. And the experience I felt was going to really, really benefit me. And then also adding to that, I'd be working with, you know, with a senior team. So it became a bit of a no-brainer. And that was really my decision for going. So I went out there in the April, May of 2015. And again, there's a lot of similarities between the two countries, because of, you know, India is underdeveloped in large parts, and there is a lot of poverty there as well. And again, I think if I hadn't been out in Rwanda, I wouldn't have been able to have maybe dealt with that experience the way I dealt with it, because I had a better understanding of what to do and how to kind of manage myself.
I think that's fantastic. Obviously, you've got the opportunity to kind of experience some of those different things. So I guess, you know, you spent a couple of years at India, then you've obviously brought yourself back to London, more specifically. Head of coaching at Barnet. Did that role come up before you came across, or was that the reason why you came across?
So I had 2 years in India, and I loved every minute working out in India. The whole experience from when I arrived to when I left was really good. You know, I travelled so much during my time there. I think I worked it out. It's nearly 100 flights in 1 year that I did. So I was on a plane, you know, quite a lot, because we had to travel to games across India, and then also go across Asia for matches. So just the whole kind of experience was good for me. But I missed home, if I'm being honest. Like my partner, she was living in London, and I was away from her for 2 years. And so it was a case of if I could stay again for, you know, an extended period or come home. And, you know, my heart kind of told me that I needed to come back. So I decided to come back in 2017. And I spent some time kind of readjusting myself into life back in England, because it's such a fast-paced society that we live in this country. And in India, it's quite slow-paced. You know, things are, especially where I was living in Goa, so it's quite slow there. You know, if you was living in Delhi or one of the major cities, yeah, it's like, it's manic, you know, things are going on all the time. But just the way of life was a lot slower. So adjusting myself, and I found quite difficult, if I'm being honest. It was quite hard because I've been in two different countries. The way of life was completely different from what I've ever been used to. I've had to adapt myself into those environments and then come back into an environment I grew up in. Some people might think, oh, it's quite easy to do that, but I actually found it quite a challenge initially. And because I come back midway through the season, there wasn't really that many opportunities to maybe get back into a club that I would have wanted to. So I just took the time to connect and rebuild my network. And I ended up doing some work with England actually before they went out to India for the under-17s World Cup. And that was really, really good for me. You know, they approached me about, you know, coming in and supporting them with their preparation for the World Cup. And that was good. And, you know, Steve Cooper, who's now at Swansea, was really welcoming. And I'm glad that happened. And then that just led me on to seeing what opportunities were around for me. And because I didn't really want to relocate anymore, Barnet came up, and I'd known the head of football for a previous job. And I just felt it ticked a few boxes. It gave me an opportunity to get back into football in this country, but also because of the position, the job that I was doing, it was a new role that had been created. It was being funded by the Premier League. And also it gave me a chance to be on the Premier League EHOP course, which is something that's, you know, been really, really beneficial for me. And it's something I'm still doing now. It's like a 4-year course. So once I weighed everything up, I just felt it was the right decision at the time to go there.
Massive differences in terms of the type of environment that you're working in, going from, you know, the likes of Crystal Palace to going to Chelsea, over to Rwanda, India, now back in England at Barnet. What was going through your mind, obviously going, having some of the experiences you had, obviously glad to be back in England, yeah. London and whatnot. In terms of an environment, obviously, you know, I think is a Category 3 academy, probably very different to what you've been used to in the past, but also, you know, probably better in some ways than, you know, being out in Rwanda and India when you compare some of the facilities potentially. And I guess for a club its size, it has got some really good facilities and maybe hasn't really reached its potential the way it potentially could have, especially when you think about the catchment of players that they can sometimes get in there, and the training ground, like I said, you know, it's outstanding facilities for a club of its size.
Yeah, I think so. Initially, when I come back, I didn't think it was going to be as difficult as what it was, maybe for me to get the job that I would have liked, or maybe worked at a club that I would have wanted to. But I soon realised that when you're away from the country for a period of time, you become easily forgotten. And the game's moved on so much more in this country. And during the time that I was abroad, it moved on, you know, really, really quickly. So outside, out of mind initially. And I did think that, you know, with some of the experiences that I've had working overseas, especially at international level, and working with some of the players, you know, that I've worked with, and, you know, being a part of some of the games and fixtures that I've been a part of, I would have potentially felt that, you know, I could have added value to a club, maybe, you know, further, you know, higher up the league pyramid, let's say. But, you know, it wasn't to be. And I just, you know, I felt to myself, well, look, I've got to take the opportunity. If I'm going to be out football, I don't want to be out for too long. But it gave me an opportunity to develop in other areas. Like, I was aware of the ECCC before I left, but I didn't know what actually was involved in the ECCC because I'd been away. So actually learning that and being a part of two audits, going through the change that we had, at Barnet at the time, and I worked with three academy managers, six first team coaches. There was a lot of change in staff during that period as well. And so you get exposed to a lot more at a smaller club. And I think that's something that's really, really helped me out. The exposure that I've had and things that you have to deal with and have to manage, you wouldn't necessarily have that if you was at a bigger club. You know, like the interactions I've had with the owner at Barnet, I probably would never have had if I was working at another club. So to deal with someone like him and understand what he wants and try to manage up, it's a good experience for me. And I think it's something that, looking back, as frustrating as it could have been at times, the positives are that the actual learning experience I gained from that is hopefully going to set me up and make me better at my job for wherever I go next, because I was exposed to so much more, adding to the experiences I've already had.
Definitely. I mean, I can totally relate to that, you know, in the past, you know, it was a real grounding for me in some ways, because, you know, there's so many different things going on, and because of the infrastructure that's there, and I guess, well, maybe in some cases considered a lack of infrastructure that's there, you're forced to kind of be creative, be adaptable, be flexible in the way that you work, and come up with some, you know, fantastic solutions to kind of get around some of the day-to-day challenges. Like, I remember when I was there, you know, there were some really difficult times where you might only have, it sounds crazy when you think about it, it's a professional football club or a professional football club academy anyway, you might only have one bag of balls for maybe two or three sets of players. You might only get a quarter of a pitch for a squad of 25 or two sets of players, and, you know, and then constantly the bookings of the pitches and all of that stuff, you know what I'm talking about there. And it really did challenge you to become creative, and how are you gonna achieve some of these things. And I guess, you know, for someone like yourself, maybe coming from an environment where you didn't have to maybe consider some of those things in the past, and for someone on the other side of it, maybe it's gone from that to kind of now going into another environment, I think it gives you a different appreciation. You know, you're not thinking, right, you know, you're at Barnet, okay, well, I've only got a certain amount of cones, balls and bibs that I can use because I need to share it with that lot. Whereas, you know, the problems you might have at Chelsea, well, how many cones, bibs and balls do I actually want? How much should I request?
I think, again, it comes down to, like, being humble again. And I think because I've experienced some things, you know, in the previous jobs, not in terms of being under-resourced, but just, you know, being under-resourced in other aspects in terms of infrastructures. But I didn't expect maybe to deal with some of the things that I had to deal with at the club at the time. And that was a frustration, because you just felt, right, well, you really want to take the club forward and progress it. And you know, most people know that Barnet does produce players, and the catchment area is great for the club. You know, we didn't really have to recruit that much, because they would almost come off the Jubilee line and walk in the back gate, and then you've got you know, a few players, and they're just rolling off nowhere, from nowhere. And I felt that was you know, something that was really, really positive, you know, with regards to the club having players that were really raw, they were rough diamonds, trying to polish them up and then try to move them on. And I think if the club's approach was different, in the sense that we could be a developing club that develops players and then moves them on to other clubs, then, you know, the academy and the club would be in a much better position, you know, than it was and than it currently is, because you would have had a continuous conveyor belt of players that, you know, that you would be developing, and, you know, we would be competing with, you know, some of the bigger clubs in London or, you know, in the southeast, even though we were quite small. In comparison. But I think what people got to remember is that there's some very, really, you know, very, very good people that worked at the club that have now since left and gone on to, you know, develop their careers elsewhere, and are doing really, really well for themselves. And I think that one thing that that whole experience has taught me is how to, you must value people. Take care of the people that you're working with and that you've got around you, because if you don't, then, you know, you're going to lose people. And I think that maybe that might have been a mistake that the club has had over the years, is just understanding the importance of valuing people. Because when I look back of actually the amount of people that have worked there and the jobs that they're doing now, if the club was able to you know, keep hold of them and develop them and take care of them, the club would be in a much better situation than it currently is.
I totally agree with that. I think, you know, there has been, but I think it's because of the nature of the environment forces people to have to develop in some ways. So you're naturally going to get good quality people coming out that may not have been the best coming in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. And it makes you adaptable. Those types of environments make you adaptable. And there's lots of other clubs that are very similar to Barnet. And, you know, I think when you're working in environments where you have everything, you get used to that and you get comfortable. I wonder how many coaches that are working in a Cat 1 environment could then step back down to a Cat 3 environment and work in that and try to implement and maybe do some of the things that they were doing at the, you know, Cat 1 level. I think they would get very frustrated because they're just used to having pretty much everything on a plate for them. But again, like, you have to understand the environment you're working in, the resources you've got, and be adaptable to your surroundings. And I think that's what Barnet really helped do for me and many other people that have worked there, you know, since, you know, which was a positive. It's just a shame that the academy's like folded and they don't have, you know, a 9-18s program anymore, because, you know, there's a lot of good players that have, you know, fallen out of the system that, you know, should be playing in an academy football somewhere.
100%. You know, I'm just interested now that, you know, you've had all those different experiences and, you know, a range of different experiences across different countries. What would you say some of the biggest bugbear? What would you say is a consistent thing that you've seen across all these environments? You think to myself that, you know, this is just something that just doesn't go away. It's there. It's following coaching regardless of the environment it's in, if that makes sense.
I think egos. I think that's the biggest thing I would say. I think every coach has got an ego because you always think you can improve and you're better than the next previous person. And I think it's good to have confidence and believe in yourself and believe in your abilities. But I think you have to manage your ego, not you in particular, but in general, because people see through that quite quickly. People can see, you know, what you're like as a person and how you come across. So that's one thing I would say, like managing like ego, the egos of coaches and I suppose also the egos of players as well, because regardless of the club that you're working in or the environment you're working in, you're always going to have the best players for that team. And they're always going to have an ego because they know they're the best player. And so how do you manage that? And how do you manage coaches and staff that have egos as well? So that's one thing I would say that maybe is apparent to me that I've witnessed over the time that I've been coaching or been involved in football.
No, definitely. I can definitely relate to that one. I think it's just an industry that is full of egos, and I think some bigger than others, shall we say. Kind of move away from that now. You know, just interested that, you know, you had the experience of going to Rwanda, and you said it was probably the best experience that you had in your life. What was the biggest challenge that you faced? Not just specifically because of your time as a Rwanda, but as a coach in general. And it might be something that you're still dealing with now, Lee, but I'd be interested to know what it was. If it's something that you've managed to get across or get over, how have you gone about doing that? Or if it's something you're still currently dealing with, how did you plan on getting around it?
So in Rwanda, the language barrier was a challenge because everyone spoke Kinyarwanda, which is their national language. So they were starting to introduce English into the national curriculum. And, you know, there was a percentage of people that would speak English and communicate that well, you know, through that way. But I had a translator most of the time. And so to try and learn Kinyarwanda would have taken me a long time. being serious. And, you know, you have to then think, well, I'm going to be here for the next 10 years. So it's worth me doing. So finding ways to communicate with people that don't understand you, that was a challenge initially. But I felt that it really helped me enhance my communication, because you learn to communicate in other ways. So I would coach football through my translator, but then I'd use a lot of sign language, and I'd put a lot of responsibility on players that understood English that could then translate that to their teammates. So for example, the captain of Rwanda spoke fluent English. So I used him as my kind of go-to guy to translate any kind of message that I wanted to get across to the players. And that's something that was really, you know, helpful for me. In India, it wasn't so bad because it's, you know, it's commonly spoken, like English, across the whole country. The fact they've got like 120 different dialects, you know, across India, something ridiculous, I think. But English is spoken, you know, all over. So that wasn't so bad, I suppose. The communication, dealing with that language barrier initially was a challenge. But I think dealing with pressure, actually, when you're stepping into the sharper end and dealing with the pressure and getting media scrutiny, that's tough. That's really, really tough. Like, people think, like, India, small country. Yeah, it's a small country in football terms. But if you're representing 1.3 billion people, that's huge. You know, and then all of the millions of people that, you know, are living around the world, you know, so you've got a lot of weight and a lot of expectation on your shoulders to deliver, because you're delivering for a nation, you're delivering for people. I'm not saying 1.3 billion people are all going to support football, but there's going to be a huge percentage. So the football fraternity out there is really, really passionate about the game. And so you have a duty of responsibility, duty of care to get results and do the right things. I think one thing that that would always stay in my mind was the first few games that we had in India, we didn't get off to the best of starts. And it was during our World Cup qualifying group. And I think we lost our first four games. And we were playing Guam in India, in Bangalore. And the pressure that was building up to that game was something that I've never experienced before, because it was all over the press. It was on the news. It was in the papers. You could just sense there was like a lot of tension around like the camp, and especially with the players and all of the staff. And basically it was like, well, if you don't win this game, see you later sort of thing. You're going to be potentially going home. And that was something that I could feel. That wasn't necessarily said, but that was kind of how I was feeling. Thankfully, we won the game and then went on an unbelievable unbeaten run and won the South Asian Championships and various other things. So it could have gone completely the opposite. But dealing with those types of pressures that you wouldn't necessarily deal with if you're working in an academy somewhere is something that, again, is really, really beneficial to, you know, understanding how football works in so many different ways, because it can make or break it, like understanding how to deal with that pressure. When you're doing like a press conference for the first time and being then grilled by journalists and asked so many questions and knowing what to say and how to say it and not kind of promise too much, you don't want to come across too confident and, you know, say you're going to do this and this, and then an interview in a couple of months' time, they then catch you out and say, well, you was going to do this. Why haven't you done? That's what you said a few months ago. And so you've got to be very, very careful in how you kind of manage the press. So those things were really kind of like new experiences for me, some things that I hadn't kind of had before.
Definitely. You mentioned there, obviously, you know, your time at Rwanda and like some of the challenges you had, and I could really resonate with that. So, I mean, for me, I had a situation where a couple of years ago, working in a 16 to 19s further education program. And we had players from, I'm talking around the world, you know, all the different continents, all the different parts of the world. So you had players from Ethiopia, Eritrea, you had players from Jamaica, you had players from Congo, and, you know, all just literally players from across the world. And that experience was like massive learning curve for me and a great eye opener for me, in the sense that, similar to what you said there about, you know, you were then relying on certain places to be able to communicate for you because they weren't all able to speak English. But what it really showed me more than anything is, actually, what am I going to do if this person is not here to help me? So, yeah. I mean, for me, you know, what I started doing was, I was thinking, right, what are some of the terms that I like to use as a coach? And what do I want them to mean? Why do I define those terms? So I ended up finding out, I got myself, I guess, almost like, you know, a mate of mine who can speak a couple of different languages, broke down to him exactly what I meant by each of these terms, and almost created a little bit of a thesaurus or a dictionary, if you like, of these different terms I'd like to use when I'm working with these different players. So, you know, that it got to a situation where I had some of these terms in French. Don't ask me now what they are, because I can't remember, but some of them in French, some of them in Spanish, and, you know, some a couple other languages. And I'm, so that if I'm speaking to anyone from these communities that are, you know, that speak that dialect, that I can maybe see, in some ways, give them that information. But, you know, I was having a conversation recently with someone, and they were talking about how they had an experience where they had to go out to China, I think it was. And he goes, you know, one thing I took away from the conversation was that if you want to become fantastic at being a coach, you can demonstrate, go and work with a group of players that don't know how to speak the same language as you.
Yeah.
You'll have no choice but to demonstrate.
100%. I think also as well, though, you get respect from players by doing, so like you were talking about having like a little coaching dictionary. So if you can learn certain words that might mean pass, stop, you know, run, all those the basic words, but, you know, that's going to allow you to communicate better with the players. The players are going to buy into that because they're not going to expect you then to speak their language or multiple languages. But if you're showing that you're willing to learn and try, they will start to like jump through hoops for you. And that was the biggest thing that I actually felt from especially from my time in Rwanda, that the players really bought into it. And like some of the performances that we had, and I'm still in touch with a number of the players still now. And we, you know, and I think that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have maybe gone that little extra mile to you know, to show that, yeah, I'm actually willing to try and help you out a bit more and show that, you know, I actually do care about what I'm trying to do here.
100%. I think one of the, you know, just to kind of to add into that, you know, I remember from that experience that actually kind of really touched on what you said there. So I didn't really stop at the football terms. What at the time I was, I'm still trying, I guess, trying to learn Spanish. And there was a few Colombian players in the group, Spanish speaking, obviously. And I kind of, because I was trying to learn Spanish for myself anyway, I kind of said to him, well, look, anytime that you now see me in this environment, I don't want you to speak in English with me. Just speak Spanish. Because, you know, I do believe, you know, you're immersing yourself in it is how you're going to get it. So he got to a point where, you know, first few days I'm like, I've been doing a bit of learning about, you know, different words and phrases here, but the confidence part is another element. It's right. I know what some of this means, but actually being able to kind of now implement it and use it is a separate conversation. And got to the point where I'm thinking to myself, I know what you're saying, but I'm not too sure that I can respond. Yeah. And eventually over time, it might be right. I can really respond in, I guess, broken words. Then it was, okay, I can string together a sentence. And I found myself over time, because I'm now trying to get them to kind of be consistent with it. And I think the same applies for me as a coach. If I'm now consistent with it, they will clock onto that, as you said, and they will respect that and buy into that, because they'll be like, oh, well, this guy's actually taking an effort to connect with us and relate with us. You know, even, and I think also that element of, yeah, I'm going to put myself out there, make myself vulnerable and allow you to see me in a vulnerable position. Yes, I'm the coach, but actually, just like you, I'm also a learner. It might be learning on different things, but I'm also a learner. So let's help each other here. And I think it's that camaraderie and that collaborative approach to development that was really important for me, and I really kind of picked up from going through that experience.
I totally agree with you. I think going back to one of the questions asked about, like, one of the things I may have done or, you know, picked up during my time overseas is, I think, how to utilize people. I didn't utilize maybe my staff in India as well as I should have done at the time. And it's because I didn't know how to. It wasn't that I didn't delegate or give them responsibilities. I should have been a bit more effective in things that I did and have more of a a collaborative approach to how things were done in terms of structure of training, game plans, all of those types of things. Initially, it was my ideas. This is what I would like to do, rather than understanding everyone's point of view. Everyone's should have an input into what we are trying to do here. And I think, you know, on reflection of that, when I came back to England and seeing maybe how, especially, you know, in this country, we're using like a multidisciplinary approach so much more, and it's so effective. Understanding how to use that and put that into play effectively. If I had have known how to do that when I was out in India, I think potentially the results or the performance or the way I would have worked would have been so much better. But again, you only know what you know, right? And I think that, again, coming back to Barnet, it's taught me so many things that I might not have been aware of in a completely different environment to what I've ever been used to before. But I do think, yeah, utilizing people is really, really, really important, because you can't take it all on yourself. You can't take the whole responsibility of everything. I think you have to share that load.
Definitely, I think you're spot on there. And, you know, just kind of on that then, you know, speaking of sharing load, I want to know about sharing messages and information. Now, you know, you've had a load of experiences, both in and outside the country, working in youth and senior football. If you could go back to yourself, Lee Johnson, age 18, he's just crept onto his level 2, he's just finished that, what would be some of the messages or a key message that you want to give yourself if you had the opportunity back then?
Believe in yourself. I think something that I have struggled with over the years is that kind of self-belief, that you know, you are capable and you are good and you can do it. So I think if you knowing that now, that's something that I would have definitely have said. And I think maybe actually having an actual clear vision or a clear goal of where you want to be, I think that's important, especially now. Like, a lot of work I'm doing with the Premier League on my hot course is all about, it's like individual goals, like it's your focus of where you want to be, what you want to achieve and how you're going to do it. So it's, and especially with the job that I was doing at Barnet at the time, it was about developing people. Everyone's journey was different. So you had some coaches that would want to work at this level. Some coaches just wanted to get this qualification. Okay. And you're setting targets and goals for individuals. And maybe that's something that potentially I would have done differently when I was younger. But then again, this is fairly new now, that all of these kind of approaches into how we work is completely different from what it was back then. You was almost like left to your own devices to kind of find your way, sort of thing. And if you got in with the right people, and they could help support and mentor you, then that would have been great. But I definitely think about having that kind of belief, that you're good enough to do stuff, because it is intimidating when you're a young lad. When I was 18 or 19, I was stepping into this working environment in football. Everyone I worked with at the time was nearly old enough to be my dad, you know, so I was a young kid, you know, and they had kids of the same age as me. So straight away, it's a culture shock. It's completely different, and you do have to grow up quite fast. And but that's like the foundations of who we are as people, right? We have to go through these experiences, and that's what shapes us.
100%. Now, you know, speaking of, I guess, shaping, you've gone through all those experiences. You've most recently been the head of coaching down at Barnet. Unfortunately, the academy has now folded. But where's next for Lee Johnson?
So at this current moment in time, I'm still like doing my course with the Premier League, the EHOC. So the EHOC basically is a course that supports you in the job that you was doing. And it's all about kind of mentoring managing and leading people. And at the end of that, you know, we'll get like a postgraduate diploma in coach education and coach development. So that's something that I'm continuously working on now. Should hopefully graduate next year. So that's my focus. But, you know, I want to get back into the game, and I want to work at the highest level that I can possibly work at. I love coaching. I love working with players, but I like developing people as well. I think I'm also, you know, open to the potential opportunities of going overseas again, because, you know, I'd like to make sure I have loads of different experiences. And when I look back when I'm older and think, well, yeah, I'm glad I've done that, and never missed out on something. So for me, I just want to get back into coaching. I'd like to potentially take a role up as a head of coaching again, to support the course that I'm doing, because I think it's a good role. It's a different job that I've done before. And I really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed the actual experience and the opportunity to be a part of the actual program. But something inside me still wants to go back into senior football, because I miss that buzz, that excitement, the, you know, the positive and negative stress that comes with that. It's a bit of a drug, it's a bit of a buzz, and you'd like to get that back. So if an opportunity came and it was right for me and my family, then I'll definitely consider it.
Excellent. And kind of build on that, we start to wind down now then. Now, if I gave you 60 seconds now to kind of wrap up some golden nuggets for the listeners and viewers, what would that or those be?
I think never turn down an opportunity, because if you don't take it, somebody else will. And even if you don't think you're ready, just do the job and learn on the job. You're going to make mistakes, but you learn from those mistakes. So that would be one. Have confidence and you know, the self-belief that, you know, that you're capable of doing a job or working at a certain level. And, you know, I'd say set yourself targets, set yourself goals. So if you want to work at a Cat 1 academy, if you want to be a manager of a senior team or work at international level, then set that as your target and work towards that. And, you know, it's never going to go smooth. There's going to be some bumps along the way. And it's how you overcome that. But I think if you've got a clear objective of where you would like to be, then that's one thing I would say. And then I think finally is understanding that coaching isn't just about, you know, working with players on the pitch. It's bigger than that. It's so much bigger than that. I think it's about building relationships and having good communication with people first and foremost, because if you don't have that, no matter how good a coach you are, you're going to struggle. And I think if you get that right, then your coaching will take care of itself, because there's some really knowledgeable coaches out there that are very bad communicators, but there's some really good communicators and people that are able to develop good relationships with people that might not be as good at coaching, but can manage people in a way that gets the best out of them. And I think that if you can work on that and merge those two together, then you're giving yourself a good opportunity to have a good career in the game.
Definitely. And, you know, just on a, I guess, a final note now then, you know, you've just by having this conversation sitting with me today, you know, you've made yourself part of the coaches network. And I'm just curious to know, like, what is the, I guess, the message or the legacy that you want to leave behind for everyone else?
Well, from my own personal legacy, I suppose, it's a difficult one, actually. It's like, and I've never really thought of that before. I think like, in terms of my own personal legacy, I just want to be known for being the best developer of people that I can possibly be, whether that's coaches or whether that's players or whether that's people working in, you know, within football or club. I think that's what I'd like to try to continue to be, you know, the best developer of people that I can possibly be.
Excellent. And Lee, just on a final note then, you know, if anyone, you know, wanted to get in touch with you, you know, because we've touched on some fantastic points throughout this conversation, I'm sure there'll be loads of people asking questions or wanting to know more. And if they did want to know more, either beyond around what we've discussed today or even beyond potentially, is there somewhere they can get in touch with you to do that?
Yeah, so you can get in touch on Twitter. My handle is LeeJohnson80, and I'm also on LinkedIn. So you can search my profile on there. So they're the two best ways to get in touch and drop me a message if you want to.
Perfect. Well, Leo, thank you again for your time today. It's been very insightful for me, and I'm sure it has been for the listeners and viewers as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And listen, you're doing a great job. You've interviewed some really good people over the last few months, and credit to yourself.
Thank you.
there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.